usually, of late, at least at my congregation, I usually, especially if it's a particularly heavy subject, I try to start off with some bad jokes. Usually they're Unitarian Universalist jokes. So permit me, and you have a month to think about it. Call me, I won't do it again next week, next month. That's not a good one. Here's one. A dead Universalist is a person all dressed up with no place to go. I know. It's bad, isn't it? It's worse. And y'all laughed at it. That's even worse. Here's one for you. There's one that's really risque. I won't do that. Okay. This is trouble people in this congregation. A Unitarian Universalist, a Hindu and a Jew, were on their way to an interfaith conference when their car broke down, and they were forced to seek refuge for the night at a farm. And they were welcomed, but informed that there was only room for two of them. One of them would have to stay in the barn, so the Hindu volunteered to do so. And soon there was a knock at the door. It was the Hindu who informed them that staying in the barn was impossible because there was a cow there. The Jewish brother then agreed to stay in the barn and went out, and soon there was another knock at the door. And it was the Jew who informed them that staying in the barn was impossible because there was a pig there. The Unitarian Universalist then happily agreed to stay in the barn, and he went out. And soon there was a knock at the door. It was the cow and the pig. Terrible. It's terrible. I got a million of them. Well, I'm glad you like it. I'll bring more. What I want to talk about today, it may seem a little redundant, but I think it's probably going to be more developmental. And any genuine spiritual path, Hinduism, A Course in Miracles, New Thought, which I don't really believe in, I think it's all ancient wisdom that we're just catching up with. But we know that the last level of manifestation is inside us, right? It's the cause. And just as the 12 steps tell us, if you look at the world today, our best thinking got us here. Okay, our best thinking got us here. And so for many of us, I have a half-sister who I would move heaven and earth for. And she is an evangelical fundamentalist Christian. And so what we do is, we've gotten to the point where we just won't talk about it. And that's cool because basically what happens, I can get very judgmental, which I really know how to do, but I also wind up wanting to be right. And at 58 years young, I'm finally getting it that I'm not here to be right. I'm here to be at peace. And I'm not going to ask for a show of hands here, but I'm sure I'm not alone when I say that. And so what I want us to do, what I'm inviting you to do, since that's the theme of this month, is that I'm inviting you to try to open your hearts to get some understanding from where this type of thinking may come from. I'm not saying you to be inauthentic, and if you don't get along with certain people because of their religious beliefs, that is fine. Good fences make good neighbors, Robert Frost reminds us. But what I am saying is that if we want to be the people we say we want to be, we want to grow. If you don't like the word spiritual, then use another word. But we are here to grow. And a lot of times the situation doesn't have to change, but as A Course in Miracles reminds us, that we change. And that's where the miracle comes, because the situation changes, because we have a different perspective. And so perhaps fundamentalism and doubt will shed some light on that. A lot of us, we just read something about cherishing our doubts. And we that's wonderful. We're seekers. But sometimes I think we need to be reminded that the whole purpose of seeking is to what? Is to find something? Okay, it's nice to be a seeker, but there are other things. You want to find something in life. You want to share something in life. And fundamentalism is a dirty and scary word in our culture today. And why? Because most of the time, it is being used with the words religion and terrorism, right? And so fundamentalism has taken religion and torn it down the middle into a right way, a correct way to worship, and a wrong way to worship. Let's begin with the word fundamental. It's a good word. It's not a dirty word. It derives from the same root as foundation. And so, whether it's a building, whether it's an idea or a thought or a life, it has to be founded on something and hopefully something solid. Right? And now comes the ism. Okay, and then the hair stands on it. The back hunches up, and maybe rightly so. But fundamentalism comes about when people feel threatened. So there's always that element of fear. And you've heard me say it here before, and you've heard other people say it, that you get up in the morning and you have two choices in this life, in this body, that there's fear, or there's love, and then there's fear. Those are your two choices. You get to choose between those every day in every situation. But there's truth to that. But what I'm realizing, and we can talk about it later, is that what is all-encompassing has no opposite. Love has no opposite. Love wants to cast out fear, if we use the biblical term. Love embraces fear. Love wants to nurture fear. But what is all-encompassing? So when people come to us and they pluck, we got one nerve left and they pluck that one, it's a cry for help. And what I'm asking us to do is try to see it that way. Not that we're better, not that we're more enlightened, even though there are times we are, but there are times when we're not so. But what are fundamentalists threatened by? They're threatened by modernity. They're threatened by modernity. The Christian church was threatened a century or so ago by Darwinism and the so-called higher biblical criticism, of which I am a product, a man of the West. I went to Union. We took that German higher biblical criticism and we looked at the Bible like we would read a newspaper. Who, what, when, where, how, why? One of those. And it showed that the Bible was spliced together from different documents. And so there were a lot of brilliant people, and it's not hyperbole at Union. Intellectual giants. But what they would say is, I'm going to just regurgitate back to the professors what they want so I could pass this exam because they're not going to take away my Jesus. And to me, it was such a waste because I'm still paying for my education, so at those prices, I'm just going to take in all I can. But my point being is it was that fear. And yes, we know that scriptures are pieced together from fragments. Knowledge of history and biblical languages tell us this. Bishop Spong will be back in town next week, and I'm a big fan of his. And wonderful. He was a member at one time or was affiliated with the Jesus Seminar. But the Jesus Seminar is a great example of showing that one cannot get to the divinity of Jesus using secular means. You just can't get there from here. And we forget that that's what religion does. Religion derives from the transcendent world, and religious people or clergy and scholars are custodians of that world. Fundamentalism has an upside and a downside, like most things in life. The upside in Christianity, for instance, is that fundamentalism is attempting to hold on to the enduring truths of Christianity or any other religion. The downside is that in doing so, it has latched on to its own interpretations of the truth and has pronounced other interpretations anathema. Religious historian Karen Armstrong suggests in her book, The Battle for God, that there is a seething cauldron of resentment in all the different guises of fundamentalism, which creates us versus them. She also points out that there are actually two fundamentalisms going on today. Religious fundamentalism and the equally dogmatic fundamentalism of today's secular culture. We just call it conservatives versus liberals. But then again, not all people have to think alike to love alike. We know that. Not all people think alike anyway. Joseph Campbell, the mythologist, describes fundamentalism's version of tolerance as, you worship God in your way, and I'll worship him in his. That's awful big of him, isn't it? But see, there I'm judging. There it is. But they really believe this. And so, again, most fundamentalism on some level, most fundamentalists are feeling very threatened. And fear is the culprit, deriving from a sense of insecurity. People are scared. The world is a very scary place for some people. Now, back to modernity for a moment. Modernity causes concern to the fundamentalist because it refuses any criticism of itself. It considers itself to be critical, but does not criticize its own methods. This is what frightens religious fundamentalists of all stripes. This is what frightens these brothers in ISIS. If it appears everything's going to be lost, then I'm going to cling to it. I'm going to cling to what is known. I'm going to cling to the literal. I'm going to cling to the external. Fundamentalism and secularism are two sides of the same coin, like Malcolm and Martin. Secularism is totalitarian as it rejects any opposition to itself. It considers its views to be pervasive. It considers all of its enemies to be fanatical, blind, and unintelligent. It has many ways of anathematizing and demonizing its opponents. Now, modernism is a worldview or philosophy that came along during the Renaissance, and it grew in the West, and it gradually became dominant. It privileges rationalism, and that is the prevalence of human reason as the ultimate determining factor of everything. Everything. I see y'all frowning, but you're just going to have to swallow it for a few more minutes, because I know that's in our, and so I'll probably repeat it, but we as Unitarian Universalists, man, we are dogmatic in our liberalism. We really are. And they just don't get it, those Republicans. They just don't get it, those Tea Party. They just don't get it. We get it. And so that's why Neil Donald Walsh talks about in Conversations with God, this is why Marianne Williamson, this is why Reverend Michael Carter, and some of you, Reverend Judy Long, that we need a theology of humility. That's the answer to fundamentalism. Ours is a what? A different way. Not necessarily a better way. I had someone at my church say, a Unitarian, she bugged me because she never uses the word universalist. I have to remind her, sometimes publicly, she welcomes us, we are a Unitarian congregation. They're universalist in here. And it's, oh, well, that's a unit. You sound like a Unitarian. As if Unitarians are the only people who appreciate the good, the true, the beautiful. And so it's something for us to look at as well. Cheers. Dr. Saeed Hossein Nasser, in his book, The Heart of Islam, says that we are all in need of a vision that would allow us to live at peace with each other and the rest of God's creation. And he goes on to say that the current or modern situation, which we as human beings have created, right, our best thinking got us here, we consider this to be normative. Now, that's changing, obviously, with people like Bernie Sanders. And I mean, yes, human evolution is slow, but it does happen. But when we try to apply religious and spiritual teachings to the situation in our world today, and when they don't work, we fault the teachings. We don't fault ourselves. It just doesn't work. That's naive. What are you thinking about, Michael? That's why we all are reformers of everything but ourselves. There was something on Facebook a few weeks ago, and there was a cartoon, and there was I guess it was a politician, and he was saying, how many people here want change? And everybody raised their hand. And then the next panel said, how many of y'all want to change? Ne'er a dog barked, as they say. Not one hand went up. When we say we need to reform Islam, for instance, who has the authority to do that? Right? I mean, Bin Laden tried to do this. Even before he worked for the CIA, it was a mess. It's a mess. Reform Christianity, which led to the Salem witch trials, tried to reform Christianity. And we know that was a mess. John Calvin wanted to reform Christianity. It's a mess. Perhaps the great religious and spiritual traditions can assist us in reforming ourselves if we have the vision and the courage to do so. The possibility is always there. First of all, the times in which we live are so out of joint because everything seems to be happening at once. And so our nation, again, there is change, and I am hopeful, but we've still decided to live by bread alone. And by that I mean we still decide to put material ends as final and ultimate ends. So now the entire planet is doing what we've taught them to do. The cutting down of trees in the Amazon is affecting our lungs here in Washington and New York and North Carolina. It's the interconnected web, remember we talk about that, of which we're all a part. So all peoples of the earth are participating in the destruction of the earth that originated here in the West. The Pope calls it global indifference, what's going on today. And so now we have the crisis of modernism, we have the crisis of fundamentalism, and we have the crisis of climate change, all happening at once. And so now I think a second look at spirituality and religion is in order. And I'm not talking about what we have now as religion or the way Islam and Christianity interprets it. Most people think that in order to make religion more popular, we should modernize it even more. And that's the last thing we need to do. The idea that somehow all the religions are incomplete and that we all need to get together to create a religion, a total, it's not true. Why? I'm glad you asked. Because the traditions come from the sacred and they are there to lead us back to the sacred. Therefore, no tradition is really incomplete. There are only different paths to the sacred. And we are living in a time when it's extremely important for followers of each path to realize that. The great era of Brother Karl Marx, for example, who said that the multiplicity of religions proves that they are all false, is incorrect. These differences complement one another. And secondly, it would help those who are already on one of these paths or trails to realize that we can't survive with a tribal mentality anymore. Our very lives are at stake. We have today, in our lifetime, the opportunity of interacting with people from other worlds, from other humanities, and these from other paths. And these humanities are extremely impressive spiritually. When we ask what is the opposite of fundamentalism, we might first think of openness, but again, it's humility. We're almost done. Now we're going to go to doubt. Anne Lamott says, and I love this quote, that doubts are the ants in the pants of faith. The capacity to tolerate or accept doubt, to respect the stranger and learn to live with her, to live with humility, to value the eros of what it means to be human, of human connectedness, and to rejoice in mystery is the answer to fundamentalism. The question is, can we find it in these challenging times? And for better or for worse, religious feeling is what It's part of being human. So for those of you humanists and atheists out there, you've come this far. But you're going to have to deal with it because religious feelings go directly to the core of the personality of what it means to be human for three quarters of this globe. God is the name people give their highest and ultimate personal value, their ultimate concern. And some of us are still fighting over the word. There are people still, well, you mentioned the word God. I'm tired of babysitting. If you're 65 years old and older, and if you're still angry at your parents, then you haven't grown up. Now, not unless you were fondled by a priest or something. That's okay. That's beyond my realm. But if you're still mad because you were scarred by your religion of origin, well, guess what? We all have been. Now, this feeling can be violently defended in borderline or narcissistic rage. It can be transformed into tribalistic groupthink. Martyrs are in abundant supply because of this perceived threat of secular culture, because political, economic interests are pursued without the restraint of conscience. This is what people are upset about, ladies and gentlemen. The banksters on Wall Street are great illustrations. Carl Jung in 1925 stated that if you run across people who think themselves born without a religious sense, that's absurd. It's like saying they were born without eyes. It simply means that they've left all that side of themselves in the unconscious. All of us believe in something, right? At the end of the year, see where you put your time. That's your God. Our culture is a culture that is changing. It's dominated by rationality, where the non-rational is still not taken completely seriously. But it is changing. I've written books on UFOs in the Bible. Much more open now, but at the beginning, it was rough. Because people couldn't see that. We were brainwashed into it's just us, and da-da-da. So I had to keep on pushing, but I'm glad I did. That's just a part of it. What can neither be seen or touched or subject to experimental truth is often held in intellectual contempt. Religious feeling is not at home or respected. In postmodernism, truth is conceived as relative to the subjectivity of the perceiver, and reality is held to be unknowable. Universal truth is oftentimes rejected. Fundamentalism is a revolt against this type of thinking. It is obviously not perfect, but at least now you know some of the reasons where people are coming from. And now, because we are open-minded and open-hearted individuals, we can have more what? Compassion. Don't have to agree, but we have an understanding. Mystery simply is. Religious experience is absolute. You can only say to me, I can say, you know what? I saw a being from another world in my room, or I saw a ship. And all you can say is, well, I've never had such an experience. And I can reply, well, I have. And the discussion abruptly ends. And that's okay. But to tell me that I'm crazy or I didn't see it or what have you, that just doesn't fly anymore. The fact remains that mystery is not in conflict with reason or science. Its path can be traced back through the sacred literature of many myths and legends. I see you looking at your watch, and believe me, I'm almost done. And you can trace it back into the hearts of men and women whose quest has been simply to understand the basis for their existence. Howard Thurman reminds us that truth found in any religion is there because it's true. It's not true simply because it's found in the religion. Obviously, this is something our fundamentalistic brothers and sisters have not learned yet. So what lies ahead? Who knows? If I knew, I'd split the Nobel Prize money with you. Conflict is unavoidable. But so too is inclusivity in the presence of the sacred. May it always be so. Amen. And blessed be. Isn't that a happy little hummer to start your morning off with? Luckily, there's a football game on later.